This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msbnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Paul Feinbaum of the SEC Network, ESPN, is going to join us now, courtesy of our friends at Craneworks.
Lift it, load it, grade it, grind it, move it, haul it, rig it, dig it. Craneworks, Motorworks, Rentalworks, yeah! The big dog's got it.
Paul Feinbaum on Three-Man Front is brought to you by Craneworks. Lift it, buy it, rent it. The big dog's got it. And now, Paul Feinbaum.
And Paul joins us, as all of our guests do, on the Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline. Paul, hope you're doing well. I told the guys this morning, now I know how Country Boy Eddie felt all of those years and getting up at this time and doing his television show. And I asked Pat, I said, you've known Paul forever. What's the routine of Paul Feinbaum? Can you take us through, do you mind sharing your morning routine, what you do typically when you wake up?
Well, I do get up early now, but Lando, let me go back. My first job out of college, I graduated on a Friday or Saturday, and my first job in Louisiana was on Monday, and I worked at the time was an afternoon paper, which you don't find anymore. And I had to be there at 4:30 in the morning, and I had never been up before 8 in my life until that morning, and I swear I didn't know where I was or what country or world I lived in. And it kept going on and on because I would have to go home and take a nap. And at 7 o'clock, I wasn't sure if it was in the morning or night. But needless to say, that job didn't work out very well for me.
And needless to say, Paul, back in the day when you were in the studio, you and I prepared for the show. A lot of people thought that we might talk it over at 1:45, 2 o'clock before we came on the air. But we actually would be talking at this time every morning, trying to plan out what we're going to do for the day.
Yeah, no, I know this comes as a big surprise to at least not your listeners, but our listeners that we plan, that show over the years. It seems like it just happened, but we did spend a long time, and at least 5 or 10 minutes planning, and the rest just gossiping about
that's
the radio
true.
Industry.
That's true,
Paul. You mentioned in your first job you didn't feel like you knew what planet you were on. I think a lot of college football fans, based on everything that's happening right now, they're not sure what planet that sport is living on. Of everything that's happening and everything that looks like it may be changing, which do you think will disrupt the sport that we know right now the most moving forward?
Well, Cole, it's definitely the NIL, because, for all the conversation about the playoff, whether it happens in 2 years or in 5 years, it's not going to affect every single college player or every single college program, where NIL, which is due to happen in, I think, 2 weeks from today, is going to disrupt. And not only is it going to disrupt players in terms of whether they can collect money or not, which obviously they'll be able to, I think the biggest impact is on fans, because you understand this, Cole, having played when your generation, the previous generation, every generation of football players thinks the next one is worthless and didn't have to go through what we went through in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s. And I think it's going to be a big divide, with older college football fans resenting younger players making money when they didn't. And I don't know if it's going to turn the sport upside down, but I think it has the most potential to of anything I've seen in generations.
Paul, how surprised were you so far that Notre Dame's been amenable to the potential 12-team playoff format?
Well, I think Notre Dame had to figure out, how are we going to participate in this in Notre Dame? And, Jack Swarbrick, who's the athletic department, he's part of the four-person committee, is a really smart guy. I think he's one of the most brilliant people in intercollegiate athletics. He's a former corporate attorney. He was considered at one time to be the possible NCAA president, and, man, would that have been a great move had he been chosen versus the current empty suit who's sitting in that chair. And so he sat down, and I believe he formed a particularly strong relationship. I mean, he may have already had it, but it became stronger with the SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. And I think he realized we have to give something to get something. Now, the question is, what do they get? I think what they get out of this is not to be penalized for not having a conference game. Until now, and forget last year, Notre Dame was in a vulnerable spot because they did not play the conference championship game while everyone else did, so they did not take that risk. So they've been given a free pass there, and what's been taken off the table is their ability to have a first-round bye. But on the other hand, if they're worthy of a first-round bye, then they get a first-round game, which is worth a lot of money, and it's a tremendous advantage for any school, especially one below the Mason-Dixon line, to have to play at Notre Dame in late December.
All right, Paul, once we get to this new proposed format, when it's actually enacted, what do you think after completing that first year is, what are the naysayers going to say? What do you think the first thing that they're going to point out and start bellyaching about, and what tweaks need to be made?
Well, I think if it goes into effect in 2 years, and let's hope it does, I think they're going to bellyache about how much they hate the second round games at neutral sites. And guys, I don't know about you, but I'm officially sick of all those games. And I know this year there are some really good ones, Alabama, Miami, and Atlanta, Georgia, Clemson, Charlotte. Those are fantastic matchups, but they don't need to be at neutral sites anymore. I think we've cycled out of that. And we've all been to those games, and yeah, some are really cool. And I remember the first time I went to Jerry's World, and the first game in Atlanta, and the first game here and there. But after a while, they really get stale. And I'm talking about the preseason games, and even the ones at the end of the year in the playoffs. I mean, some are really bad. You compare an atmosphere in Dallas. Now, Atlanta is different because it's a home game for whatever SEC school is in there. But those games in Dallas, there's going to be games in Indianapolis. Everyone wants to act like the Rose Bowl is so sacrosanct. But last year, Alabama should have been there. Alabama Notre Dame had that game been in the Rose Bowl. I mean, is that really all that special? Playing a game, thousands of miles from home as opposed to a home game. That to me is going to be the conversation.
So home games, obviously, Paul, are going to be a big reason why maybe player safety or amount of games doesn't ever really come to the forefront of a lot of these conversations if we get to 12 playoff games. Do you believe it's going to be at least a real part behind the scenes of some college football administrators saying, if we're going to go to 12-team playoffs, we've got to eliminate a regular season game or two?
Well, I think you'll hear it, Cole, but I think we've already moved past that. And, college coaches, administrators, talk show hosts, we all use whatever we want to as a convenience. And player safety is just something we throw up there every time we don't want to do something. And, ultimately, I think we'll survive it. I mean, this is not like the NBA where, they play the season that seemed like it just ended a couple of months ago, and then it restarted, and now we're closing in on the end of it again. And yeah, players are getting hurt. I realize that's professional sports, but I think, and I talked to you about this on our show the other day. I think the college players can deal with it. The best teams are deep anyway, and by the end of the year, that's really what's going to separate you from everyone else is if you have depth, and if you don't, you're not going to survive.
Paul, I want to ask you something that took place on Friday, and it kind of made us all scratch our head. We just didn't understand why it happened. Larry Scott is releasing statements, the outgoing Pac-12 commissioner, in regards to what he believes should happen with this college football playoff expansion. Mike Oresko, the commissioner of the AAC, came out over the weekend, took a shot at him. So, again, what in the world's going on with the Pac-12 lack of leadership to even let this clown release a statement like he did?
Well, I think you're being charitable, Pat, calling him a clown. I say that, and I will admit, I've been around Larry Scott a couple of times, and he's a smart guy. But what he's trying to do now is to rewrite history, and history is going to show him to be a terrible commissioner. And even though he probably had very little to do with most of, if not all of, what happened on the field, he is going to get blamed for it. The biggest problem that Larry Scott had as commissioner is he was brought in as this savant of the world of professional sports. I think he had run professional tennis. Pat, I remember you and I were together. It was in Arizona.
Correct.
We had been invited to a
cocktail
party.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very select. I remember telling former Commissioner Slive about this invitation, and he was pretty irritated, if you remember.
I do.
He didn't like... Larry Scott was trying to woo the media from the South, Mm-hmm. And we went, and quite frankly, I fell for it. I mean, he was
moved.
I mean,
it was really nice.
He walked over to both of us, and I thought, man, and I mistakenly, you know, said to anyone who would listen, this guy is going to be a power broker.
I remember that.
Yeah, he wasn't. because the reason why he wasn't is that he could never get the Pac-12 network up and running. He was arrogant in the negotiations, and you know, he did not follow the same path that the Big Ten had done, and ultimately the SEC, which are the two standalone conference networks. And that was his failure. He was a guy that had a background in media, and it's hard to imagine that day in 2000. Late 2010, early 2011, how we would be talking about him 10 years later, 11 years later, in such unflattering terms.
Paul Feinbaum, the Paul Feinbaum Show, ESPN, the SEC Network, joining us courtesy of Craneworks on the Ultra Organic Seltzer Hotline. All right, Paul, of these three coaches, which one do you think wins a national championship first? Is it Ryan Day, Kirby Smart, or Lincoln Riley?
I think it's Kirby Smart, because I think of those three, he's got the best chance this year. And by the way, he doesn't not by much over Lincoln Riley. I think this is an Oklahoma team that finally is capable. But I see, you know, the same fate for Oklahoma as always. But Kirby Smart to me has a really good chance. I mean, if you look at this, if you take out the two meltdowns against Alabama. If you excise that out of the conversation and simply look at what Georgia has on its roster and the schedule, I mean, Georgia, you know, should easily be considered among the two or three top favorites to win the national championship this year. And especially when you look at that first game, right now, it's easy to predict games 6, 7, 8 weeks out. If I had to predict a game today, I'd predict Georgia to beat Clemson. And if that happens, we all know what's going to be happening the next Monday. I mean, Georgia will be the talk of the country.
I'm really interested, Paul, in some of your commentary about the Pac-12 network, because we spent some time discussing it here on the show. And I want to go back to what you said about that failure in and of itself, and then obviously now the exiting commissioner saying that they need to be guaranteed a spot in the playoff. I have said on this show multiple times that I do not think the Pac-12 can catch the other Power 5 conferences in a traditional manner, that if they are going to get even close to what the other Power 5 leagues are, they're going to have to really think outside the box, be very creative, very innovative, to sort of get on the level of the ACC, SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12. If I put you in that seat today, what are some of the first few things that you would do that you feel like you could realistically accomplish as the commissioner of the Pac-12 to try to gain some ground on those other Power 5 leagues?
Well, the first thing I would do would be to try to put a legal restriction on Larry Scott from ever speaking again for the Pac-12. And I'm serious about that. And, you know, your image and reputation matters. You don't see the commissioner of the ACC, or the SEC, you know, making ridiculous statements. Everything they say, all the comments are measured. And by the way, then you just have to control what the controllables. And, you know, you can't do much more than try to influence your presidents and athletic directors. But, you know, you have to just keep pushing them, schedule bigger games. And I think that's part of it, Cole. I mean, what if 2 years ago, Oregon had beaten Auburn in that first game of the season? And we all know it was razor close. I mean, Bo Nix will spend the rest of his life talking about that game. I hope he has something more to talk about. But those are your opportunities, and you have to take advantage of them because you don't know whether you're going to be in the playoffs or not. So, you know, you have to keep getting those games, and you just have to, you also just have to manage your media better. And I don't know what they can do from a conference network standpoint. I think it's too, having been part of the Pat, you remember these days, because you were working with us. The beginning of the network is critical because, yep, you know, the SEC got off the ground in a way that no one else has ever done through distribution. And, you know, the Pac-12 can't do that anymore. you know, I think they do a moderately good job of managing their media, but, you know, what good does it do when a bunch of guys talk about how good the league's going to be and then they're not? So I just think you have to just manage your expectations better, manage your message better, Cole. I think that's really where I would start.
Well, Paul, we appreciate you letting us interrupt your show prep. We'll let you get back to it. But thanks, yeah. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys, thank you, and all the best. I know this was an early day for you, but you've done a great job so far.
Well, this is the way we want to wake up every single Monday morning with you, if that makes sense, I guess.
Thank you, Landon. Talk to you guys soon.
Thank you. Paul Feinbaum, the SEC Network, joining us, courtesy of our friends at Craneworks. The talented team at Craneworks is the group to call for crane and equipment rentals. Craneworks is a fixture on Jock 94.5 in our city skyline, and we thank them for bringing on Paul each and every week. Something he said about Notre Dame. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, it was. The fact that you can get Notre Dame to agree to move forward with this 12-team playoff, Cole, because Notre Dame has always been the fly in the ointment, whether it was the BCS or now the college football playoff, you know, whether they were a top 10 ranked team being able to be considered for a BCS bowl game and so on. But for them to be able to give that up and for Swarbrick to actually mention, hey, listen, now people can't complain about Notre Dame getting favorable treatment.
Well, I think what you look at, Pat, is this is Jack Swarbrick saying that Notre Dame's going to be an independent for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
I think this essentially, you know, puts their flag in the dirt saying that we're not going to join a conference. We don't feel like we need to. We don't feel like we have to. And we're not going to. If it's a 12-team playoff, I understand where you could see that six of the spots are guaranteed, and some people may look at that as unfavorable to Notre Dame, but with six other spots remaining, how many years is Notre Dame not going to be in that mix?
Yeah.
I mean, it essentially becomes much easier, in my opinion, for Notre Dame to get in. I mean, they've been in multiple college football playoffs, and that was with four spots and with no guaranteed spots. So now, I think there's a great chance you're looking at Notre Dame being in this playoff on a more frequent basis than they have been under the previous model if we get to 12.
And you know what? They're okay with missing out of that bye, because if they get a home game in South Bend, Indiana in December,
that's an advantage.
What a huge home field advantage.
Let that grass grow long. Get a Big 12 or SEC or ACC team. You know,
They used to do the grass growing long. I know Northwestern, they've been accused of doing it.
People accuse Notre Dame of doing that. I just think it's always been that way. I don't think they did it for certain opponents. I just think that's always the way that their field has been.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Three Man Front.